So you want to be a content creator. That's fun and probably a little intimidating.
Oh, absolutely. Emerging creators have a lot to figure out, from funding and family support to technical know-how, contacts, community, and of course, their own creative process.
It can definitely be a bit overwhelming, but as the good old saying goes, every journey begins with a single step. So put on your walking shoes because we're here to help you find your footing.
Welcome to the premiere episode of First Frame, brought to you by Tell a Story Hub. I'm Jennifer Park.
And I'm Cameron Zinger. And Jen, I'm absolutely delighted to be co-hosting this brand new podcast with you.
Yes, I am too. This is going to be so incredible. We really want to take some time to celebrate the journey of Canadian content creators, whether they're just starting out, whether they're well down the road, or simply looking for fresh perspectives.
Exactly. Every episode will feature inspiring stories, great advice, and candid conversations with established creative leaders. We'll hear about their wins and their setbacks. And ultimately, we're going to provide the creative community with some mentorship and a sense of belonging.
Canadian creators need a podcast to call home, and this is it.
Because this is our very first episode, we want to begin with the question that plagues a lot of creators or would-be creators, especially when they're just starting out. Can I really do this?
For sure. There are a lot of things, both real and imagined, that can derail your dream before you even put pen to paper, conduct a single interview, or shoot your first frame of video. See what I did there?
So how can you overcome that self-doubt, indecision, fear of failure, and take that first step forward in your career in content creation? To answer that question, we've assembled a truly all-star lineup of guests to take part in a panel discussion.
To start, it is my pleasure to introduce Kat Jamie, a Vancouver-based documentary filmmaker whose works include Finding Big Country, The Grizzly Truth, and the ESPN 30 for 30, I'm Just Here for the Riot. Kat, welcome to First Frame.
Thanks for having me.
Also joining us, I'm excited to introduce Kelsey Delamater, who created the groundbreaking podcast, Career in Alberta.
Okay, mabuhay, everybody. I am so happy to be here.
And rounding out our panel is Calgary's Griffin Cork, an actor and producer best known for his show, Abracadabbers. Griffin, great to have you with us.
Hi, folks. Thanks for having me.
Before we talk about the challenge of finding your creative spark, I'd love to hear your origin stories. Kat, let's start with you. I understand you pretty much grew up with a camera in your face.
Yeah, that's right. My grandfather just documented every aspect of my life, of my cousin's life. And so before smartphones were a thing, I was going to high school with my family video camcorder, and I would just film everything that my friends and I would do. I was on student council, and instead of plays, which were, you know, previous years had done before that, first assemblies, I would show my films. And so my classmates were actually my first audience members. I went to film school after that at UBC and then got an internship at the National Film Board of Canada, where I worked about 3 or 4 years as a production coordinator, where I learned kind of like the nuts and bolts of filmmaking and applied to Story Hive. It was like instrumental in getting my first film out the door, Finding Big Country. You know, after that got released, a lot of doors opened for me. So I'm, you know, obviously very grateful to Story Hive for getting the ball rolling for me in my career.
Thank you so much for sharing. You've had quite the journey.
What about you, Kels? I hear you describe your journey as a little bit of a happy accident.
Yeah, I mean, for me, a lot of my work centralizes around queer communities and marginalized communities based here in Alberta, and specifically Southern Alberta. And that came from feeling a little bit of scarcity, both in my queerness and my Filipino identity. So I started making videos online. And that's why I always say it's a happy accident, because I went from little, I think, 7-second, 10-second TikToks at the time, to this whole project that is way beyond my wildest dreams. And many other like doors have opened, like Kat said, as soon as I applied for Story Hive. It's just been this phenomenal domino effect that has been really fun. It's been a journey that I never expected. I've learned so much in a really short period of time. And I've been able to meet so many other wonderful creatives like Kat and Griffin.
Griffin, I actually hear you and Kels went to school together. What a small world.
That's right. U of L. Go. Oh no, Lux is the name of the mascot.
You are so done.
I know, don't tell
you
me
you are
U of L.
So canceled, Diva. Mm-hmm.
Like, big horns?
Oh my goodness, you're a fake U of L.
Oh no.
I disown you. No, you were right though the first time. It's Luxy is the mascot and we're the pronghorns.
My old high school was the Rams. I have a lot of horned animals in my school sports careers.
So Griffin, how did you first get into the biz?
I started acting quite young. I think my first full-on like actor gig, I was in grade 5. I did a movie of the week kind of style movie with Matthew Perry called The Ron Clark Story. And so I went on as an actor for a while. And oftentimes you come on an indie film set and you get your check and you leave and you see it at the screening and that's your involvement. But I was asked on to the very first $10,000 Story Hive funded pilot of Abracadabbers. And we didn't get the funding that round. And it was the first time as an actor, I was like, huh, this one's really cool. A lot of the film stuff that was coming out of Alberta was hockey movies or cowboy movies. And this was something weird. And I was like, well, what do we do? How do we keep this going? And so I was kind of pestering the show's creator, Morgan Ermter. And I was like, well, there's this festival. I think Story Hive is doing the $100,000 grant. Like what can be done? And eventually the other two folks at Dumera went, well, why don't you just come help? So I kind of pestered my way into film producing, and I've been producing for almost 10 years now.
So I wanted to jump in and ask a question for each one of you. Who has inspired you along the way?
That is such a hard question. You probably saw my face there. I'm like, who has inspired me? Because there's so many figures. I mean, on just like a really personal note, I do have to give such a huge shout out to my program manager, Georgina Chaplin. I always, always make sure to shout her out because she had so much faith in me when I first started, and that stayed constant throughout, and more faith than I even had in myself. I kind of thought I had some imposter syndrome coming in. You know, I was a master's of anthropology student. I didn't have anything to do with film at that point, but her faith in me really inspired me to see it in myself. And so, yeah, right away, she's the first person I think of.
Oh, I love hearing that. We are really, really fortunate. We have some really amazing people that work on the team, and I know how passionate they are about working with you creators and making sure that we help you guys succeed in the work that you're doing. So I'm really happy to hear that. How about you, Kat?
So my ultimate dream has always been to direct a ESPN 30 for 30, but it's very, you know, this very elusive thing. ESPN is in the States. I'm Canadian. How do I even, you know, cross that bridge? It's a long story short. There's a short film that I loved. It's called Jake. And then I found the director's email address, sent him this really long email. And it was just like, I love what you do. And I want, like, one day I want to do what you do. Is it possible? Like, I'm going to New York with my dad in a few months. Can I grab a coffee and pick your brain? And he was super nice. His name is John Hawk. He's become one of my mentors. And I met him in New York, and I essentially was like, I want to make a film about the Vancouver Grizzlies. And he was like, you know, when you're ready, just call me and I will connect you with the heads of 30 for 30. So then when my co-director Asia Youngman and I wanted to pitch I'm Just Here for the Riot, we already had this connection with 30 for 30.
I love that.
Yeah. And by the way, I remember being at Hot Docs in Toronto and seeing Here for the Riot for the first time. And like,
that's awesome.
Yeah, great film. I lived through the riots here in Vancouver. I was right downtown living when it happened. So it brought back a lot of memories.
Yeah.
Really great job.
Thank you.
How about you, Griffin? Who inspires you?
I'll take this time to give a shout out to the rest of our little cohort at Numera Films, the co-founders of Numera. I joined when it officially incorporated, but Morgan Ermter and Joseph Wright, our main cinematographer, came up with the idea of Numera Films in the back of a SAIT classroom. Kenya Weaver, our main production designer, Haley Foss, our main production coordinator, Anthony Shikalski, works in writing and development. More than anything, though, I'll give a shout out to Morgan Ermter. If we're going to call Abracadabra somebody's series, it's Morgan's series. They're the creator of the series. They directed the full first season and most of the other episodes of season 2 and season 3. They write a lot of the episodes. They do almost the entire amount of post-production on the episodes. They are the heart and soul of Numera Films, and we would not be able to do what we do without Morgan. Anytime I want to talk about Abracadabras, I need to talk about Morgan because it's their series, it's their baby, it's their project. It would not be possible without Morgan.
We'll have to pull that clip and you can send it off to Morgan and
that's right.
show you your me. Love.
You owe me.
So then I have a question for each of you, being that you've all had a number of years in the industry. What do you believe constitutes good content?
Good content.
Tough question.
I feel like I would define good content as content that the creator can stand behind. Like if somebody questions you on the content, you should be able to back it up and defend it fiercely. Because that means you believe in it. That means you probably like it. And if you can't do those two things, then why are you making it?
That's a good point. I think I have a bit of a counter to Griffin's point there. So this will be fun. I totally agree. Like you should be very proud of what you create and it should come from passion. But for me, like so much of my work is community focused. And so I think like something I always advocate for is that if you're going to create something that's maybe even from a community separate from yours, then that community needs to stand up behind it and be the one to advocate and to defend it or whatever it is and be proud of it more so. I think a lot of people want to tell stories, but when you're engaging with marginalized communities in particular, it's important that they are at the center of every aspect of that project.
100%.
It's no secret that you've all found success in your chosen careers. And with that means that you've had to put in a lot of work and a lot of effort, and it doesn't necessarily come easy. So next, we'd like to unpack some of the challenges you faced along the way and how you've overcome them.
Kels, let's start with you. Hoping you can tell us about maybe some of the obstacles that you've run into and how you dealt with them.
I think I'll be the first person to say that I was probably my number one obstacle standing in my way in the beginning. I kind of felt like I almost snuck my way into the StoryHive project because I felt so, you know, from such a totally different sphere. But I would have to be giving myself way too much credit to be able to sneak in when you folks do so much work to try and select fantastic talent. So I'm not that crafty or anything to be able to get past. But once I started to realize that StoryHive was more than just, you know, the funding and really the support as well that came from Georgina, from the whole team, starting to ask for help and starting to advocate for when there were gaps in my knowledge, not only helped me create something better, but opened me up to learning more skills to be the creator that I am today, which really excites me. I never thought that I would be able to do the things that I do, and I'm still learning. And I think that's the best thing. When you overcome that hurdle of like shying away from your vulnerabilities or those gaps in your knowledge, your whole life and your whole artistic journey can change.
I really appreciate you saying that, because I think that when it comes to creators wanting to jump in to creating content, that self-doubt is probably the first thing that stops them from trying.
Totally. And I hear it from other StoryHive creators that are starting for the first time. So I always try to encourage them, just reach out to the resources that are there. And the other thing that I think is my favorite thing is the community of creators like Kat, like Griffin. There's so many folks I've met now in Calgary, in Lethbridge, in Alberta, in Vancouver even, that we know each other through all going through this program, and we're all willing to help one another out.
That's so good to hear.
That's great to hear. So Griffin, what are your biggest pain points in the creation process, and how do you usually get past them?
I feel like I have kind of just a different angle on Kels's, but we almost had the reverse problem where you're right. Like when you enter the game and you feel like you have to pretend that you know everything, that really gets in your own way. For us, we would kind of undercut ourselves too much. We would be in a meeting with a broadcaster or a platform or a distributor, and we'd go, and so here's why we think you should fund it. Oh, if you want, maybe you don't have to, where the meeting was going very good, but then expressing too much, I don't know, not enough self-assuredness would make them lose confidence in us. So it's a very fine line to ride. You don't want to make yourself look too much like small fry, but you don't want to pretend like you're something you're not. And all of that comes from confidence in what you do. You are allowed to acknowledge that you have a cool thing and also acknowledge that you don't know what you're doing sometimes, but the product you've made is pretty cool and people should be interested in it and people should put money into it.
They should. They should all put money into it, shouldn't they?
That's right. That's a real producer talking.
Manifest.
Kat, over to you. It sounds like you started your journey creating content long before you ever had a plan to create content. So at this point, what do you wish you'd known before starting your journey?
One of the greatest lessons I've learned as an artist is that, you know, I spent 2 years pitching Find a Big Country before I got funding. And what was so funny was that, you know, at this point in my career, I had no connections to the NBA. I was really just convincing people that I was going to find Bryant Reeves. So this NBA superstar who lives somewhere in Oklahoma, but I don't know where he is. And I had to sell, like, I will be the first to find him. And so you kind of, you know, as Griffin's saying, you go to all these meetings and you have to sell that you're going to do this thing. So you're super confident in what you're doing. And then you go home and you're like, but okay, wait, how am I actually going to do this? Like, how am I actually going to find Bryant Reeves? Like, I've spent 2 years telling everyone that I'm going to do it, but like, how am I actually going to do this? And I remember the morning that I woke up, go to the airport, and I was just like, what the hell have I done to myself? Like, I'm doing this to myself, right? Like, no one has told me that I have to go to Oklahoma, that I have to get on this plane. I've told everyone for the past 2 years that I'm going to do this. But why? Like, why? And I remember it was just this realization that, like, I'm self-inflicting And I've come to recognize, like, whenever I feel this fear, it's like a mixture of like fear and excitement and nervousness. So I've learned to like embrace this feeling, like recognize it and then be like, okay, this only means the bigger the risk, the bigger the reward. So the bigger the jump, the bigger the reward. I always think about Finding McCountry because that film truly opened so many doors for me.
Sounds like all of you really, you know, you just need to take that first jump, that first leap, and trust yourself. That really sounds like that's what sparked all of this for each one of you, is trusting in yourself and just doing it. This has been great so far. But before we go any further in our conversation, we want to take a quick break for a fun segment we like to call What's in Your Kit?
Yes. So here's the plan. We'd love to ask each of you, what is your favorite tool of the trade? Maybe it's a piece of hardware that you can't live without. Maybe it's software. Maybe it's AI. A person. Could be pretty much anything that you rely on to do what you do. Griffin, let's start with you.
My answer is very producery and admin-y and kind of boring, but I was sleeping on a PDF editor for too long. Every time that I messed up on a PDF, I would have to reopen the Word doc, I would have to re-edit it, and then re-turn it into a PDF, and then send the PDF. Being able to open something like Adobe and just tweaking the elements on a PDF? A PDF is locked. How do you do it? I love it. I love Adobe. I'll shout out Adobe PDF Editor. You can get the simplest, most basic plan. I should have done it years ago. I can't believe I didn't.
Anything to save time, right?
I'm so angry at my past self for not having a PDF editor.
Kels, over to you.
When I first started interviewing for Queer in Alberta, I was just using the U of L's Zoom software that they provided to university students. So shout out to them. I wasn't supposed to do that, but I did. So I'll say that if you're doing online podcasting, what we're doing right now on Riverside is fantastic. But on a gushy, sweet note, my partner, Sarah, I probably couldn't live without. She's seen way too many times, I think, every episode of Queer in Alberta to reassure me if it looks good or what she thinks needs to change is an external pair of eyes. So when you mentioned a person, she was also top of mind.
That community of support, right? Got to keep you going. Kat, over to you.
I'm a big journaler. I like going for walks and just having a piece of paper and a pen. And I usually find my great ideas kind of come when I'm not doing anything and I just kind of let my brain wander. I always get teased by my friends because I still use like a paper calendar. I like seeing things on paper. So if someone calls me and like wants to hang out, I always have to be like, okay, I'm driving, I'm not home. And I have to check. They're like, your paper calendar. Cool, Kat. Yeah, it's 2025.
I have one on my fridge.
Yeah, exactly.
I got one on my fridge. Yeah.
Good for you.
I sound a lot like you, Kat. I'm the person that, you know, goes and does something outside and gets ideas. I think I drive Jed and crazy. I'll send her ideas via text all the time. I'm like, what about this? And she's like, oh, add it to your list.
Exactly.
Now it's time to get to the heart of the conversation and the key question that we're here today to talk about, which is, can I really do this? When did you realize that, yes, you could really actually do this as a legitimate career?
I don't know if I ever questioned it. Like I always, filmmaking in high school, that's what I wanted to study in university. And thankfully, there was a program at UBC. And I remember just thinking like, I love documenting things. It's no surprise that I became a documentary filmmaker. I'm actually in the process of digitizing about like 500 mini DV tapes from like, you know, just from 2005, like up until now. I always just wanted to document things. I find the beauty in like, just like the everyday. I don't know if there was like a light bulb moment. I just kind of took this passion and have just sort of run with it ever since.
And it's evident. You can see it in your work. How about you, Griffin?
I think there was a moment where I realized how communal this kind of business is, where there was something that just clicked in my brain. I don't think I could name a particular project, but there was just something where I was on set and you just kind of have the moment of, wow, this is anywhere from 20 to 200 to 2 person operation. And we're all working towards the same goal of either this, like this director's vision, this writer's vision, this team's vision. And then on the flip side, the directors that I'm really inspired by, the directors and writers that I really like working with, also always flip that around. And they'll kind of ask anybody and everybody on set what their thoughts are, like to work very collaboratively. It's such a people-based business. I think that's why I like working in it. There's something so beautiful about either finding a group of people you like working with that you work with all the time, or you find a co-star or a scriptee or a craft services person that you form the deepest connection with over 20 to 30 days, and then maybe you never see them again. That there's something so beautiful in that.
We see that in our StoryHive content creator.
Yes, of course.
Slack spaces too. Like it's that community that you're saying that's built, and the people wanting to help and support each other, and the network building and uplifting each other. It's really something quite amazing to see. So
yeah.
How about yourself, Kels? What made you realize that I could do this as a career?
I mean, even though we talked about the happy accident of finding myself here, the through line has always been that ever since I was really little, I've loved telling stories. I actually wanted to be a writer when I was really, really young, and recently just had my first published work about Filipino histories and specifically my mother and my family. So multiple dreams are coming true. And to answer your question, even though I did anthropology and then did StoryHive, that storytelling was always the thing that I was always passionate about. So I work in Canada's museums and podcasting, and I know that as long as I'm connecting with community and sharing those stories and breathing them in, that's something that I need to continue to go on.
That's amazing. And congratulations.
Totally.
Thank you. Very My exciting. Nai is so stoked about it. She's like, I'm your star.
That's awesome.
Love that. Well, I want to ask each of you, what would you say to a creator or a would-be creator, someone who's thought of doing this but hasn't really, you know, jumped in to do it, if they feel like they're not maybe cut out to do it or they're not sure if this is for them?
What would I say? I mean, there's so many times, truly, I wish I wanted to be something else because it's not an easy job. It, you know, it might sound very cool and very glamorous, but it is so grueling. It is so time consuming. It is such a grind. Documentary filmmaking is like, it's 90% relationship building, and it has to be real and has to be genuine. So it's very time consuming and it's very emotional. And so like I there's so many times I'm like, oh, I wish I didn't want to do this. But there's just like this nagging voice in your head that just like won't shut up until you do it. I think it's okay to have self-doubt, you know, that sinking feeling sometimes. But it's part of your job to sort of, again, protect your dream. If someone says no, it doesn't mean that it's a bad idea. Maybe there's something that you have to work on that's just not hitting right and you just have to finesse it a little bit. And then just go for it, because my job is a tough one, but the adventures that you get to go on are just life-changing adventures. And they're so much fun.
I love that. And I love the fact that you talked about if you hear a no, keep going, because it's something at StoryHive, because we do get a lot of creators that are applying to our programs. I wish I had an endless bucket of funding that we could fund everybody's story. We just don't have the ability to do that. So I love the advice to just keep going and keep going, even if you get a no. Kels, what advice would you give to somebody?
Kat really took the words out of my mouth. I was really just going to say that a no isn't forever. Like, it's not finite. You have the opportunity to learn from it. And I think when we're so scared of even putting ourselves out there, a no is better than a what if, because then you can pivot and you can learn and you can adjust. So I think that's something that I would say. You're never going to know if you don't put yourself out there and try. And if it's a no, it's not forever.
Exactly. I love that. Griffin.
Something we operate on at Dumera is a philosophy that you're going to get one yes for every 10 no's. So we, for a while there, when we were like really deep in it, we would have a list going on our whiteboard where we, when we were at 7 no's, we knew that it was coming, and we never got the 10 no's. There was always a yes. But if we got 2 yeses in a row, then we know there's maybe 20 no's coming. However, to maybe offer a piece of advice, so I'm not just the third guy also saying, don't worry about no's. It's something that you touched on, Jennifer, in terms of like, maybe it's just not the right career for me. I don't think that anybody can say that it's not the career for them unless they've tried every kind of production or pre-production or post-production position in film or podcasting or audio production or animation, because there will be something that you like and something that you're good at. For example, I can't write. I'm not a writer. I'm good at script notes, maybe, or continuity things. I've tried writing. I'm terrible at it. So yeah, it's part of Kels's advice is to acknowledge your faults and what you don't know and learn from that. Even if you're not a writer, you might be a director, or you might be a producer, or you might be a script supervisor, or you might be a gaffer, or you might work in the greens department, which is a position that I didn't even know existed 3 years ago. And now I do.
And if you don't love it, that's where your community comes in, right?
Yes.
Yeah. All I hear is you're building a network more and more. The more roles you try, the more things you're doing, the more people you're meeting, and you'll find your niche or your passion.
The piece of advice that I got the most growing up in this business was the more you can do, the more you'll work, which I mean, I've definitely found is true. But yeah, when you find a group of people that you like working with, don't let them go. Working with people you love makes the hard parts of this business so much easier.
That's a great piece of advice. So we're almost out of time, but before we go, I want to ask each one of you one more question. What one piece of advice would you want to give our listeners today if they were to take away one thing from today's conversation?
I think that you just have to remember that, you know, you will get a lot of no's, but you only need one yes. You don't have to be good at everything. It's such a team effort and it's so much fun once you find your people and you just start creating magic together. Like it's you'll start to go on all these adventures. So find your friends, go create stuff and just have fun.
How about you, Griffin? What would you say?
Don't be afraid to send the email and don't be afraid to send the follow-up email. Is probably the biggest advice I'd learn from a producing standpoint. When you get into your own way sometimes of going, oh, they wouldn't want to talk to me, or my stuff's not good enough for them, or my stuff's not good enough for the festival, you're hurting yourself in ways that I cannot describe. Send the email, because then that's up to them whether they like it or not. That's not up to you.
Yeah.
And then, you know, within reason, give it a couple weeks to a month, send a follow-up email. The amount of business that I've done as a producer, just because I send a follow-up email and I'll get some kind of reply where they go, oh yeah, sorry, cool, let's do that. If you send the first email and you don't hear back, it doesn't mean they don't like it. Within reason, don't send emails every 2 days or every week. But yeah, people in the business are busy and they often get, especially broadcasters, platforms, producers, distributors get 70 emails a day. So they truly just might have missed it. Send a follow-up email.
Kels, what do you got?
I'm going to take it maybe at a bit of a simpler and less technical perspective, but this is specifically to queer and trans folks that are listening and to racialized folks that are listening. I feel like a lot of us maybe feel like the world is a little scary right now and we're not seeing our stories in the broad representation as one, but maybe we're not feeling as celebrated as we would like. And I want to say that regardless of who you are or where you're coming from, your story and your voice deserves to be heard. Regardless of how the world changes, that's never going to change, in my opinion. And I think that's something that I really want to share.
So the three that I take away is know your strengths and weaknesses, put yourself out there, and celebrate and share your story.
All great advice.
Great advice.
I just have to say, I'm absolutely blown away. I could probably spend hours talking to each one of you. So I want to thank you so much for joining us. This has been super insightful, very inspiring to our creators. But before we say goodbye, I wonder if you can all share the best way that our viewers and listeners can follow you, learn more about your work, and keep tabs on what you're doing.
If you want to keep following along with me, you can follow me on Instagram. My handle is at kels.valendela. That's my two last names smushed together. I always have people asking about that. That's the same thing for TikTok. And if you want to follow Queer in Alberta, just type that in wherever you get your podcast fix, as well as on YouTube. And yeah, that's where you can find me and keep in touch.
You can head over to my website for all sort of my latest films. I have a new feature coming up, but it hasn't been announced yet. Hopefully soon, the next few months. And you can follow me on Instagram at @KatJamieFilms.
You can follow me on all platforms or most platforms at Griffin Cork, or Numera Films at Numera Films on most platforms. We're popping into the first season of our new series, Eyes in the Woods, in May and June. So maybe some stuff about that.
That's great. Kat, Kels, and Griffin, this has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for helping Jen and I kick off our very first episode of First Frame for Story Hive. Really, really appreciate you taking the time today to meet with us. Honestly, fantastic conversation. Thank you for sharing your insights with us and our listeners.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for asking me. It's cool to be in this company.
Likewise. Thanks for having us.
What a fun little kiki. Let's do it again.
Yeah.
Well, Kem, I have to say I was really impressed by all of our guests today. What would you say was your biggest takeaway?
I think, honestly, it's putting yourself out there. I heard a lot of that. Like, don't be afraid to get a no. Keep trying. Keep knocking on those doors and you'll eventually get a yes.
Yeah.
There's someone that wants to hear your story.
That was definitely one of my takeaways. And I think the other one is really building your community. you know, acknowledging what you don't know, making sure you have people around to support you when that self-doubt creeps in, or when you don't know something, or you're overwhelmed and maybe you don't have time to learn it. That's it for the premiere of First Frame, brought to you by Tell a Story Hive. Thanks so much to you, our viewers and listeners, for joining us.
Please hit that follow button so you don't miss a single episode, and be sure to tune in next time when we explore another critical question for our creators. How do I make it real?
If you'd like to learn more about how Tell a Story Hive can help you along your content creation journey, you can check out storyhive.com. Until next time, I'm Jennifer Park.
And I'm Cameron Zinger. That's a wrap.